Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe DeLeon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
Is it technically evening yet? Because we're going earlier today. Is it late afternoon? I don't know how to define.
When does evening start?
I actually don't know. I'm legitimately asking you. I don't know when.
Let's ask Gemini. What time starts
5 and 6? So we're a little early on evening. It's a nice early afternoon show.
Well, as the Jimmy Buffett once said, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing great, Blake. How are you doing?
Good, I guess. You know, tonight I do believe signifies the turning of the college athletics page. Game 3 of the College Baseball World Series is tonight. That's why we are going live earlier. I didn't think it to be smart that you and I go live during a Game 3 winner-take-all national title, so we're here. But, Joe, there's no more college athletics after tonight until late August. So we're here. Football season technically is here.
And we have like a three-week window where there's not really much happening, and then media days start to populate 2 weeks after the 4th of July. And then once we have media days, camp starts, and then we have actual stuff to talk about. We can actually dig into stuff. That this is always it's not officially. I think that more people should recognize it as officially that when the College World Series is over, it's when we enter into we're getting there. We are ramping up towards the start of the season.
I could not be happier. I'm just being honest with you.
I agree.
Here's the real question. Has this been the craziest all season that you and I have gone through?
I don't know. The Pac-12 exploding might have been.
Not. You mean to tell me that the Brendan Sorsby Protect College Sports Act is bigger than the Big 12 Pac-12 exploding?
No, because you got to take into account here, the Brendan Sorsby story was wild. The Protect College Sports Act stuff is deeply nuanced, so I don't think very many people understand it. The Pac-12 exploding the way that it did in conference realignment, I mean, that changed the sport in its entirety. The entire sport was uprooted. I lean towards that offseason because some of the other stuff happened that offseason that I'm...
Yeah, I'm Texas, Oklahoma, entering the SEC.
No, wasn't that the offseason prior to that?
Nico Iamalava.
That's a different offseason, so that's...
2022?
Nico... Oh, you're talking about the Nico recruitment?
Yeah, the Nico recruitment. The whole Tennessee suing.
I don't know if that was the same offseason.
Yeah, I mean, because he's going to be a junior. Because 2023 would have been his. No, yeah, 2023, 2024, 2024. No, maybe you're right.
Yeah, because the Pac-12.
The Pac-12
was 2022. The Pac-12 was 2022. Nico was his freshman year, and Nico was in the 2023 recruiting class.
Yeah, maybe I'm being prisoner of the moment. Maybe it's Cody Campbell. Doing whatever he wants and nobody doing anything. Brendan Sorsby, by the way, we haven't spoke about Brendan Sorsby. Did you see the report of Cincinnati knowing?
Yes, I admittedly, and I think I talked to you about this, I did not want to talk about that. I'm ready to move on. It is an NFL story now. It is done. We are not talking about Brendan Sorsby anymore on this show.
Yeah, well, he does have a pro day on July the 10th, which I do think it's funny. Maybe I'm just being a prisoner of the moment. But I don't know if I am. If this bill goes to the floor and gets passed, it definitely will be the biggest offseason. If this bill gets passed, it's by far the biggest offseason without a shadow of a doubt. Because you're changing the game for every single conference and every single team all across the country. And you give the ability for a pooling of media rights.
Well, it depends. Yeah, it depends if that part comes into it. I don't know if I can fully get there. I think it's close. I think it's really close.
Yeah, you just love Pac-12 After Dark because you're a sicko. That's why you're mad.
The other thing too, we got to remember the Nick Saban retirement that was in. That was 2024.
I just don't think a 75-year-old man retiring is big news.
Dude, that was the biggest. That was the biggest story that we've covered on this channel.
I do agree. Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right. Yeah. All right. Well, we got a lot to get into. Top five offensive coordinators in the country. Joe and I will talk that. We go back to the hot seat tracker. Today we will talk about Josh Heupel, and we will do an Iowa deep dive. But before we do that, everyone do us a favor by hitting the like and share. Just subscribe down below if you are on YouTube. Hit that notification bell as well. Share to all of your friends. Let them know the college football season is fastly approaching. We greatly appreciate you doing that. If you're watching us on the 24/7 Sports Twitter page, do us a favor, hit the like button and retweet as well. And wherever you listen to podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. We will actually be with our partners over at 24/7 Sports this week. So it's going to be good to meet the new national gang for the first time since our partnership with 24/7 Sports and CBS. But go over to 24/7 Sports today. Use the promo code RJ60 at checkout. When you use that promo code, you'll get 60% off of your annual VIP membership. Again, RJ60 at checkout. There's so much recruiting news that is flying around, multiple flips around the country. Some of the top-end dudes, where are they going to go? You can go over to your 24/7 board today to find out. Do us a favor and use that promo code RJ60 at checkout. You'll be able to save that 60% off your annual VIP membership. All right, Joe, let's get into it. Our top five coordinators going into the 2026 season. We kick it off with you. Who are the top five coordinators, the way that you see it, going into the season?
At number one, I have Mike Shanahan from Indiana. Number two, I'm going with Jason Beck from Michigan. Number three, I've got Mike Denbrock from Notre Dame. Number four, Shannon Dawson from Miami. Number five, Buster Faulkner from Florida.
Just for everybody in reference to this, before I read off mine, I don't get to see Joe's top five until the show actually starts. This list is criminal.
You normally get to see it.
I normally don't get to see anything. This list is absolutely criminal. All right, we're going to get to that in just a moment. My number one, my top five here. Number one, I have the GOAT, Mike Denbrock at number one, Charlie Weiss Jr. number two, Chip Kelly at number three, Mike Shanahan of Indiana at number four, and Bobby Petrino at North Carolina at number five. Joe, I got to click back over to yours right quick. How in the world do you have Jason Beck at number two? Now, I know that Mike Shanahan's coming off of a national title. We can have the debate about that. How in the good wide world do you have Jason Beck at number two? I'm sorry, Joe.
How do you not have Jason Beck on your list? Jason Beck had one of the top offenses in the country last year.
More than Charlie Weiss Jr.?
Wait, hold up. By the way, hold on. Is he calling the plays?
Yes, he's calling plays. He's been calling plays. That's a well-known fact.
I don't know if I would give... I think Charlie Weiss Jr. is a great coach, but I don't know if I'd give him the same weight as putting him in the top five and off of an offensive coordinator list.
Lane Kiffin is the offensive mind.
Can I talk?
He was literally calling the plays during the playoffs.
Why the explanation?
Yeah, because he was calling the plays during the playoff. You knew for a fact he was.
But Blake, Charlie Weiss Jr. is a great coach. But again, Lane Kiffin has always been recognized as the offensive mastermind behind the team. Has he not? Has he always not been recognized as the guy that is leading the direction of the program?
We know for a fact, through Ole Miss, the last 4 years that he's been calling plays, that's not fugazi. And you can say offensive mind all that you want. Jason Beck's never done this in the P4, and we're just suspecting because he's doing something decently, moderately okay.
He did it at Utah. He did it at Utah, and also decently, moderately okay. They were at the tops of every single offensive category last year.
Versus Texas.
Wait,
he got put in a body bag.
That was the one bad game that they played against the one team that there was a talent.
The one good game against
a body bag, everybody got put in a body bag against Texas Tech.
Oregon didn't.
He took over we're not doing the whole order of operations crap. We're not doing the transitive property thing.
Okay.
He took over a Utah offense that was non-existent the year prior. It was one of the worst Power Four offenses. They were terrible. They were unbelievably bad last season. And when he got hired from New Mexico, they were one of the best offenses in the country. They were arguably the best offense at the G6 level. He goes to Utah, immediately dominates. They were 9th in EPA per play, 18th in EPA per dropback, 10th in EPA per rush, and they were number four. They had the number four scoring offense in the country. He did that in a year, overnight.
In the Big 12, when you got dudes, with all due respect, like Bobby Petrino, Mike Denbrock, who is on your list, who I'm glad he's on your list. Mike Denbrock, with all due respect, Jason Beck has no business being above some of these dudes on this list. I'm sorry. Neither, and I like Buster Faulkner a lot, but neither does Buster Faulkner. Brother, you got Chip Kelly, Bobby Petrino, Charlie Weiss Jr. I can name five other ones. I would even put, I know you got Shannon Dawson on yours. Buster Faulkner has no reason, neither does Jason Beck, to be put above Mike Denbrock. Joe, over the last 5 years, you can make the argument, whether you want to say Charlie Weiss Jr. or Mike Denbrock, however you want to slice it or dice it, Charlie Weiss Jr. has got to get the credit, especially coming out of the playoff run, which, by the way, in the last 4 years, they lead the country in average outside of Navy, Army, and Air Force in rushing. In rushing. Quinshon Judkins and Kawan Lacy can say hello. Mike Denbrock has led a Heisman Trophy winner, multiple first-round picks, and absolutely slicing and dicing up dudes, and took a quarterback in Riley Leonard, with all due respect, who was a subpar passer and led them to a national title. Will Howard is a national champion quarterback under Chip Kelly. Jason okay. Beck does not have the skins remotely close on the wall than what Mike Denbrock, Chip Kelly, and those other dudes do. Do I think Jason Beck will be a good coordinator? Yes. But to have him above those dudes right now is absolutely criminal.
I disagree on that, obviously, that I think that Jason Beck is one of the most underrated offensive coordinators in college football. I think that he's under-recognized because he has not been put in the same national scope as all these other coaches that you're bringing up. I am not putting Chip Kelly on this list, by the way. Chip Kelly was obviously an amazing offensive coordinator for Ohio State during their championship run, but the crap that he did in the NFL last year, I think proves to me that he's mailed it in. There's a reason, Blake, I believe that he did not end up taking a top coordinator job at the college level. Blake, there were issues last year with the Raiders where he was completely discombobulated with calling plays. He was calling stuff that wasn't even in their playbook. Their offense was atrociously bad. He got fired despite being one of the highest paid coordinators in the NFL because he was terrible. And it's not because he's a bad play caller, Blake. We know that he's a brilliant offensive mind, was a brilliant offensive mind. I think he's gotten to the point in his career where he's checked out. I'm not putting a dude on this list that's at Northwestern just because he had some amazing seasons in the past and was a brilliant play caller for the most of his career. And look, Bobby Petrino is a great coordinator. I almost put him on this list. I almost put him at five. But I am recognizing the accomplishment of taking teams that have less talent like Buster Faulkner did at Georgia Tech and turning them into one of the best offenses in the country. They were 14th in EPA per play. They were 14th in EPA per dropback. They were so explosive. They were in games that they were not supposed to be in. And I truly believe that Florida this upcoming year, their success is going to be derived from the fact that Faulkner is going to get a lot out of that offense that Billy Napier was not able to get out of it.
You really, lastly, you literally just described Bobby Petrino, by the way.
I think that he is a great play caller, but I don't think that anything that is going to happen this upcoming year for North Carolina is going to establish him in the top five. He's top 10.
Here's the thing that you're doing. You're perceiving of what you think can happen versus what has actually already happened. You're giving your opinion on what is going to happen in the future versus what has already happened in reality. And I don't know if that's how this list should be going. The way that I look at this list is, what did they actually do? By the way, you talked about taking a team with subpar talent and taking them to another level. You mean like Arkansas, who had a top five strength of schedule, and Arkansas had a top 15 total offense at number 14? They averaged 455 yards per game last year, and they were 2-10. Joe, they weren't recruiting at all, and they ran the ball on multiple playoff teams. They threw the ball on multiple playoff teams and, quite honestly, had more success offensively with a 2-10 team, with all due respect, than other playoff teams had. Buster Faulkner has not done that to that level. I'm sorry, he hadn't. If we're looking at this about what we perceive is going to happen in the future, fine. I would say if you believe that's what Jason Beck is going to do or Buster Faulkner is going to do, by all means, perceive that of what is in the future. But, Joe, there's no way that you can look at what actually has happened in reality, especially when Bobby Petrino, who I have at five, is coming off of a season with a 2-10 team who was top 15 in the country in total offense.
Okay, the talent of having Taylen Green and Mike Washington, who Taylen Green was the most physically gifted quarterback in the country last year, and Mike Washington was one of the most explosive athletes at running back. There is still, I would argue, there was more talent in that Arkansas offense than there was in the Georgia Tech offense. I don't think that there's a gigantic separation between the two. I have him at six. It was like a 5A, 5B situation here, to be very clear. I was deciding between, I'm putting Jason Beck over Bobby Petrino. I'm absolutely doing that. Blake, he completely overnight transformed Utah's offense. And I think that he's going to do the same thing in Michigan. I will admit that I made a mistake with Denbrock. I think that Denbrock should be at number two. That was a mistake on my part.
Again, there goes the word again in reference to you saying, I think he's going to do X. So is this a list about what you so I'm asking you, is this a list about what you perceive of what's going to happen or what's happened in reality?
I think it's a combination of the two. I have guys that have accomplished things. They produced the best offenses last year, and then they have the capability to transform an offense going into next season.
Okay. So if you're taking the reality versus the perception, what has Bobby Petrino done or not done that says offensively that he can't get it done versus Jason Beck, by the way, who's not been in the Big Ten or SEC to do it? Neither has Faulkner.
Why do you have to be in a top conference to be a good
Because you play can caller. Say that Taylen Green and Mike Washington were doing this, but they were doing that against playoff teams. Now both of those dudes are going up against playoff caliber teams 24/7. And are we 1,000% sure that Buster Faulkner, who can do that at Florida with that schedule religiously to lead them to wins along with Jason Beck? Because I've seen Bobby Petrino not only do it as a coordinator, I've also seen him do it as a head coach when they're going up against SEC and Big Ten teams and lighting them up. Regardless of where Bobby Petrino has been, whatever division he's been in, he's always litting those dudes completely up like a Christmas tree. So I don't go on these lists based off of what I perceive is going to happen. If I perceive on what's going to happen, quite frankly, I would probably put Mike Shanahan potentially a little bit higher than I have him. But again, it goes to what we think. I just can't, when we do lists like this, I just don't feel like that we can be in a situation where we can give our opinions to what we think in the future is going to happen versus what the reality has already shown.
The way that, again, that I'm looking at this is who had the most success last year? Who had the best offenses in the country last year? Taking what happened last year and what it is going to translate to this upcoming year. I'm looking at it in a slightly different lens than you are. I'm not just basing it off of career success for some of these coaches. I do think that to a degree, as explosive and as good as Arkansas was last year, being 2-10 has to be accounted for something for their team's success. If their offense was that good, if you've been one of the, they were number one in EPA per play last year. They were one of the most explosive and consistent offenses in the country. But if you're not finishing and winning games, at what point is that actually useful? All the coaches that I'm sticking to were teams, were coaching on teams that were at the tops of their conferences. That's how I'm looking at this. I feel like in winning is something that should be of importance for this equation.
Then why didn't you have Charlie Weiss based off of what he did in the playoff? Because Lane wasn't there.
I had a bit of pause with putting on coaches that I don't see as coordinators that have a head coach that is considered to be like a brilliant offensive mind. So, you know, we weren't going to use a USC coordinator. And I know that Lincoln calls the plays there, so it's a little bit different. Heupel doesn't work in the situation because he is the play caller for Tennessee. I do think that he is a great coordinator, and I would put him in a top 10, but I had pause putting him into a top 5, knowing that Kiffin has such an important role in the offense. Does he not?
Yes, but he's not calling plays. And how do you make a playoff run of him going up against Miami, who was a national contender, by the way, scoring more points than Indiana, who Mike Shanahan had, okay, who you have at number one? How do you justify that? How do you justify a coordinator without Lane Kiffin being there having more passing yards and more rushing yards? You can't say, well, Trinidad, well, he had the Heisman Trophy winner. He had a Heisman Trophy winner. And to be completely blunt with you, I think Mike Shanahan is a really good coordinator. But I also asked the question of, like, how do you take Charlie Weiss out of this equation just because of Lane when Lane wasn't there and they scored more? Like, it wasn't something that, like, you can take and say, well, Lane's been there with him the whole time, and now that he was there, and you can take that and put that against him. Joe, I don't think that that's right because they've led the SEC in rushing. They've been one of the best rushing attacks in the country. I mean, how do you justify Shanahan not having more yards and not having more points against Miami than what Indiana did? I mean, it's the same opponent. If you're going based off of your argument of last year with a common opponent, that's not transitive property.
Because I don't think that we can contextualize it purely from one game of a common opponent. I think that Shanahan has to be on the top of this list, no matter who we discuss. He has to be at the top of this list, considering he has been a driving force for this team's growth and improvement over the past two seasons. Their offense was one of the most efficient and consistent offenses in 2024. And in 2025, he had a Heisman Trophy winner in Fernando Mendoza, which, again, I should have put Mike Denbrock higher. That was the biggest mistake on my part that I didn't have him higher. I don't know why I did that, but they were 13th in EPA per play. They were 6th in EPA per dropback, 38th in EPA per rush. They had the number two scoring offense in the country. I also think that a key piece with this, Blake, and something that we haven't talked about, I think that Mike Shanahan is the best critical moment play caller out of any of the coaches on this list. Because look at all the moments that defined Indiana season and the entire college football season that Mike Shanahan called the right plays in the right moments where he knew he was going to get a matchup that was going to allow for his team to convert. Knowing to call a draw with Fernando Mendoza on the winning drive, or actually, I don't know if that was the winning drive off the top of my head. They're calling the fades that they've thrown to Charlie Becker in really important situations where they needed to convert. I feel like Shanahan needs to be recognized as one of the next great coaches in the sport. He's the only one. We can have a debate and we can get mad at each other over the placement of all these other guys. Shanahan's the only one where I will not concede. I think that he has to be at number one.
You're going off of a one-year sample size versus when Charlie Weiss and Dimbrock have done it longer. You're saying what happened last year and then perceiving on what you think is going to happen. Then you can't go back. You can't go past Dimbrock or Chip Kelly. Because Dimbrock, with all due respect, hasn't had an offense outside the top 25 in the last decade. So you can concede it all you want, but how do you justify not having Dimbrock, who's not had an offense out of the top 25 the last decade?
Because Dimbrock hasn't won a national championship, first of all. I think that having Shanahan won a national championship and the offense's success, the consistency, the elimination of mistakes in critical moments, all of those things, it's not like he was a part of the ride. Shanahan was a big, big reason why this team was able to win a national title this last year, why Fernando Mendoza was able to win a Heisman Trophy. As much as I love Mike Denbrock, and again, I am acknowledging in this segment, Denbrock should have been at number two. I should have moved my back to number three. I was getting a little bit too excited off of the stats that I was using to build my cases from what had happened last year. But I can't put Dimbrock ahead of Shanahan when he has not been on a national championship winning team. They have the same amount of Heisman Trophy winners that they've coached. The same amount of first round quarterbacks that they've coached. I mean, if anything, he's got the edge over him by a pick for how much higher Fernando Mendoza got picked over Jaden Daniels. I don't know if that really counts for anything, but
first and
the
foremost,
national title should mean something.
I'm sorry. First and foremost, that Indiana offense was not better than the 2023 LSU offense. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not that crazy.
Okay. So if LSU and Brian Kelly would have had a better defense, you think they wouldn't have gotten there? It's not Dimbrock. We can't look at Dimbrock and say, oh, well, he's got a national title. Indiana had a really good defense. That's not on Dimbrock. That has nothing to do with his side of the football. I mean, Joe, with all due respect, Notre Dame, when they went to a national title and carried them there with multiple injuries on defense, and then you have a situation with Jaden Daniels. I'm sorry, brother. He's got to be at one. Shanahan had a good year. They had a decent year. He had a Heisman Trophy winner. So what happens if you get in another situation where they don't live up to that again? Like Mike Dimbrock still continues to be consistent. He still continues to have top 15 offenses. He still continues to be very dynamic. That's the part for me where I look at, I don't like pulling up offensive coordinators or coordinators in general and saying that they're one of the best in the sport based off of how do we know that this isn't what Cignetti wants him to do? I mean, Cignetti was on the offensive side of the football for Saban for how long?
He was a receivers coach.
Okay. The RPO game is based off of what they did at James Madison. Isn't the same style of offense that they ran at JMU? Are you sure?
Shanahan was the one running it.
Okay. How do you know this isn't based off of what Kurt Cignetti wants? Because I remember him having a sheet on the play side. So you're hitting it with Charlie Weiss and not saying that Shanahan doesn't have the influence of Kurt Cignetti on what to run?
Kurt Cignetti's never been a play caller. Kurt Cignetti's never been an offensive coordinator. He's only been a quarterback's coach.
Coach doesn't have determination on based off of what he wants both of his offense and defense to do and how he wants them to game plan against opponents.
That's unfounded. That's not.
And what was also not what wasn't unfounded is that Lane wasn't calling plays, and you hit Weiss on it. I got to be completely blunt with you. There's no way I'm putting Mike Shanahan over Charlie Weiss based on what Charlie Weiss has done the last 5 years.
He has it. Okay, we can't do that with a guy who has won a national title. He also has not coached a Heisman Trophy winner.
He's not the sole reason that they won a Natty. I'm sorry. Offensive coordinators or defensive coordinators are not sole reasons why you win
Natty. I didn't say he was the sole reason why, but he was an incredibly critical reason why they won the national title. I think that the big game moments and play calling that they had on their national championship run in the Big Ten championship game against Miami in the national championship, those were super critical. I am not saying that Charlie Weiss Jr. is not a good coach. I just think that when you have Lane Kiffin, who's been described as this elite offensive mind, one of the greatest offensive minds that we've had the past, decade or so, it takes a little bit of a knockoff for me, because while he might be calling plays, I don't know how much influence Lane has in the game planning. Kurt Cignetti does not have influence. No.
On game planning?
No, I don't think that he has the same as what Lane Kiffin does. He's not a play caller. He hasn't been a play caller.
Joe, I'm sorry.
I can't get there.
If you think Kurt Cignetti does not have influence on game plans, then what is he there for? Then he's just a good coach at hiring coordinators.
I'm not saying that he is not involved in preparing for games, but I think you're kind of guessing if Shanahan doesn't have full control over what happens with the offense.
And you're also perceiving in reference to what you think was going to happen on some of these guys versus the reality of Mike Denbrock having a decade's worth of having top 15 offenses. How do we justify more than one season or two seasons worth of this?
Because guys regress and go backwards all the time. Hence why I didn't want to go put Chip Kelly anywhere on this list.
Okay, then Mike Denbrock and Weiss and Petrino, for what it's worth, have not done that.
I said this earlier, Petrino for me was 5B tied with Faulkner. And I decided to go with Faulkner because I think that Faulkner is, for the long term, a more impactful up-and-coming coach when we already understand what Petrino is. But again, I have them neck and neck. I just decided to go with Faulkner over the two of them because I couldn't decide.
I'm sorry. I love you to death, but you made me mad because this list is crazy.
All right, I tried.
It's criminal. Do you need? They need to put out a warrant for your list.
I think that you're sleeping on Jason Beck. We don't need to keep getting back into this. I think Jason Beck should have at least been in your top five. I think he should have been over Chip Kelly.
Not a chance. You know, because here's the thing that I got with Chip Kelly: experience.
When he gets canned at the end of the year, I think that we'll be having a different conversation.
No, you're talking. Okay, I get that he got fired at Las Vegas. You know who else got fired? A three-time Super Bowl winning coach in Pete Carroll. That organization is run horribly. Horribly. You know what else I remember about Chip Kelly, if we're going to go on a two-year window? His quarterback, who, by the way, got benched at Kansas State going 15-16 out of a national championship game. And I also see the massive regression with even potentially better players. I mean, because you could say that Julian Sain's a better quarterback than Will Howard. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
How did they regress? Massively.
I'm not. My big concern with Kelly is for the simple fact that he overnight became an awful play caller, and it was very clearly because he was not preparing. And it was very clearly that he was mailing it in. And I think that he is entering.
Everybody in Vegas mailed it in.
They should have been a lot better. They have the most athletically gifted tight end in the NFL and one of the most explosive running backs in the NFL. And they had one of the league's worst offenses. It was incoherent what they were calling.
Well,
I don't know.
This isn't the NFL. All right. Joe cursed at me for the first time in 6 weeks. It was bound to happen. Is that our longest streak? That's how you know we're actually getting ready for the season that we're yelling at each
other. I know, right. We're actually getting fully warmed up.
Here we go. All right. Hot Seat Tracker continues. Today we go to the great state of Tennessee. Joe, Josh Heupel is the topic of conversation today. When you look at the Hot Seat Tracker, Josh Heupel's name being on any of these lists, what are your thoughts on Josh Heupel? Is he on the hot seat? And another one of these really interesting cases coming off of a playoff run 2 years ago, but situations over the last 2 years potentially putting him on there, even though Tennessee has had two decades worth of being, what would you call, I wouldn't even say mediocre. They've been below mediocre since he's been there. What are your thoughts on Josh Heupel and the thought of him being on the hot seat?
Yeah, I think that he's a really interesting conversation because it seems like that there's two camps with the Tennessee fans, that they either think that he's transforming the program, or he has hit their ceiling and that they are a James Franklin type of a team and that they're just never going to be better than 10-3. There will be the occasional year that they go 11-2, like they did in 2022, and you know, the year that they made the playoff in 2024. He's had a lot of success. They were 11-2 2022, 9-4 in 2023, 10-3 in 2024, and 8-5 this past year. And unlike Matt Rhule, who we talked about last night, he has had a lot of success as a recruiter. They went from the 18th ranked class in 2021 to the 10th in 2022, the 14th in for the 2024 class, the 11th for the 2025 class, and the 8th for the 2026 class. Right now they have the 43rd class, but there's a lot of time to make that up. They've also developed at a really high level, much better than any of his predecessors, as he's had 2 first round picks and 9 second or third round picks. But Blake, I think that this upcoming year, his season is going to be defined by one of the biggest mistakes and biggest issues that he has had in his coaching career. And that was not effectively handling the quarterback situation the way that he should have. We have talked about this multiple times, and I think that we need to have a deeper conversation about this. For an offensive mind like him, who is as impactful for transforming an offense as much as he is, to not have prepared for not having Joey Aguilar and to have a stopgap quarterback, anybody, there were options that they could have gone to, and they didn't land a single quarterback. Mm-hmm. That to me is an early red flag for this might have hit its ceiling, that there is no longer the shine of, oh, they're an up-and-coming program. They're just now the middle of the pack in the SEC. I'm really worried about what's going to happen for them this year if Faison Brandon or George McIntyre can't end up being impactful enough as a freshman.
You talked about two camps. And there's an interesting part about this of people around Tennessee who believe that he still have faith in him and that he can get it done. And then there's those that don't. Here's the thing with me that's been interesting over the last 2 years for Josh Heupel, that if I was a Tennessee fan, and this is where I try to put myself into, I try to look at this as I'm a part of that fan base. Right? Like, I'm a part of, like, I want Tennessee to succeed. All right. So here we go. The Nico Iamalava situation, I could understand on being on Heupel's side, right? Guy's dad basically comes in, demands more money. You're not going to bow down. You know what? Sounds good. See you later. But then you didn't have a plan, to your point. And so as much as you're trying to regain the situation and say that, well, we went out and got Faison Brandon and he can be the starter and all of this kind of stuff, maybe he can be and maybe he will do good. But what if he struggles? What if this is a Bryce Underwood level situation here? It's not like Tennessee has an easy SEC schedule. But that's not the part for me that I look at as being the problem. The quarterback situation, yes, it might take you time to rebuild it. But then you had the Sam Levitt situation where an arch rival to you and Lane Kiffin walked off in a Knoxville airport and straight took Sam Levitt from you. You have the situation of the offseason with Boo Carter. Now you have the offseason situation with Chaz Coleman. It leads me to ask the situation, do you have control of this team? Do you have control of them? Is the chaos that has surrounded Tennessee going to be able to build into the culture of what Tennessee needs to be? I think he's a great play caller. I think he holds on to friends a little bit too long, and that's why defensively they struggled a season ago. But, Joe, they missed out on Chaz Coleman at the current moment and didn't retain Jordan Ross, who very well could be a starter for LSU this season and have a good year. I'm asking the question, does he have control? Who has control of this situation? If you want to be a play caller, then go be a play caller. But it comes off to me as that you don't have control of this team, and even though you are having more success – then what we've had in the past doesn't mean that that's where Tennessee needs to ultimately be. They're in the ultimate purgatory. This is where I put Tennessee, because I don't know if he's going to lose enough games to get fired next year. Maybe he could because you have a true freshman quarterback. But I don't think he's going to win enough games to be in a situation where you get back to where Tennessee is of relevance, like real, actual year-on-year relevance. So I feel like you're stuck in the Les Miles level purgatory where he's going to win 8 or 9 games and it's just enough to get him there and you don't really do anything with him and you're not taking the next step that you need to without a favorable schedule, which is what ultimately led them to having a playoff quote-unquote run, which Ohio State blasted him. Joe, I put this at a 3 because I just don't think that there's enough justification to pay him out based off of the wins that he's having. And by the way, Danny White, who brought him in, who's their new AD, I just don't see firing him. You're going to have an ultimate chaos. You're going have to have a horrible season for him to get fired. I just don't think it's happening. But if I'm a Tennessee fan, I don't like that he is constantly losing control of this team because that's what it seems like.
Yeah. I think one thing that's kind of interesting with Tennessee, and it's weird that they don't get the same level of coverage as some other teams do. Tennessee quietly has had one of the most tumultuous programs over the past couple of years under Heupel, with Nico doing what he did, which that was covered to the grandest degree. That was coverage.
Let me interrupt you. I know you're mad at me. Do you blame
him? I'm not mad at you.
No, but do you, you know what I mean? Do you blame him for that one though? Like you can't even really blame him for that one. You know, because it's his dad. But Joe,
It's turned into a pattern. Right. I didn't blame him. And we talked about how he did the right thing in the moment where it was like, don't give in to the pressure of being held hostage. They were literally being held hostage. He did the right thing. Set a correct standard because otherwise it would have gone rampant in the future with players holding out for more money during spring practices, and it would have become a gigantic mess. But when that happens, and then Boo Carter happens, and Chaz Coleman, which has become really weird, and the reporting has been inconsistent, and there's not really a lot of clarity if he actually has vertigo and a head issue, or if he just doesn't want to be there, he took his money and kind of just dipped. All of those things collectively have turned into distractions that no other program really has. The only other program that I could think of that isn't on a Michigan level would be Georgia, and all their incidents are related to the same thing with the driving incidents. They don't have anything else that happens.
But do you feel like Kirby has lost it? Because Kirby, like, you have stuff of Kirby going out there in practice calling people soft, and you have players coming out on a podcast saying that when we did bad, he ran us until we puked, literally. That he's there making us run stadiums until we throw up. I'm not getting that vibe from Heupel. And by the way, I mean, I get this whole thing, but by the way, I've been to Athens because my family lives in the current area. Joe, I went 7 miles over the speed limit while in Athens and got pulled over personally. I'm not saying that they're, you know, but you just don't get the vibe that Kirby is losing a program. But Chaz, you know what the players aren't doing, though? Here's the whole situation with what it makes different. Yes, Georgia is having issues with the driving problems, and I understand that. They're not showing up for practice. Chaz Coleman's not taking his money and posting it on Instagram saying, look at my NIL, and I'm not even at camp. Joe, he went to Instagram, posted a picture with thousands and thousands of dollars.
That's
and
so he's funny. Not even,
I mean, it
it's
is.
It's bad, but it's funny. It's like, you got to be kidding.
But here's another thing, too, with Kirby. They're still winning the conference.
Right. So this is, hence my pause, because like I'm this is such a complicated thing to talk about. Because at the end of the day, has there been a brand that has been more underwhelming before Heupel got there in the SEC than Tennessee?
No, Vandy.
No. But let me clarify. Brand that's supposed to be good. Tennessee has one of the biggest stadiums in the country, one of the most invested alumni bases. They're located in a great location for recruiting. they're supposed to at least be in contention in the top four. They don't need to be a national title winner every single year, but they should at least be in the mix for that. They haven't, you know, they haven't gotten there, but he has at least turned them into a consistent winner. And that's why I brought up the James Franklin part of this. And I've seen a lot of Tennessee media folk kind of make this illusion of, well, are we about to see our James Franklin moment this upcoming year where one little mistake, not going after a quarterback, leads to one bad loss that the season just falls apart in front of him? And here's the big difference. The buyout's affordable. It's $37.5 million. I don't think he gets fired this year.
That right now.
I don't. Because regardless,
it's not that, to your point, it's not massive enough that we haven't seen teams that would pull the trigger. But Danny White's his boy, though, man.
I think enough pressure from boosters.
Oh, I agree with that, too.
Changes that. I can't find clarification on if that's the end of the year or not. It does not say in this article.
All right, hold on.
I had it written down. I didn't do an effective enough job of researching that. If terminated before,
just per Gemini, do you want me to read it?
Yeah, well, this is where I got it from too.
Okay. At the end of the 2026 season, he would be on $27 million He would be on $20.25 million at the end of the 2026 season. Oh.
He's probably one of the most fireable coaches. Here's the thing that's going to happen with Josh Heupel, though. Like, legitimately could happen. He is probably the easiest coach to fire in terms of the buyout and how cheap it's going to be. But he'll probably do well enough this year.
Yeah, you're in
with a difficult situation. If they go 8-4, and when we talked about this in the preview, 8-4 is a good year if we focus on the situation at hand. Good defense, good receivers, good running back room, good offensive line, no quarterback. 8-4 is a good year, but it's not for the standard of expectation for what you should have done if you hadn't been more aggressive of going after a quarterback in the portal. There were so many options.
Oh,
you could have gotten DJ Lagway. You could have gotten Dylan Raiola. Josh Hoover was highly sought after. You didn't need to get Brandon Sorsby or Sam Levitt.
Well, and the problem is too that Sam Levitt was at the airport, and of all people, Kiffin, from a perception standpoint, Kiffin came there and took him from you. Now they go to Georgia Tech. They got Texas. They got Auburn. They got Bama. They're at South Carolina. They got at Texas A&M, LSU, and at Vandy. You sure there's 8 wins there?
If Knowles and their defense can be good as expected and as hoped, I do still think that they can be 8-4. But yeah, you're right. They have their schedule is too hard for a freshman quarterback for them to be better than 8-4. That's the truth, and that's what we talked about in the preview.
I agree. All right. Before we get out of here, Joe, we continue on our path of doing deep dives on teams. We go to the great state of Iowa, the Iowa Hawkeyes, coming off of a Iowa Hawkeye level season. Joe, this is going to be the one time where I don't dive deep into their team. Can I tell you why?
They don't have much of a team.
Well, not only that, Joe, they've been the same exact team since 2020. Their average of wins is 8.5. So I kick it over to you. Is it a new year, same Iowa? What are your thoughts?
So as I just kind of made that snide comment, they have a really low amount of returning starters and returning snaps. Per CBS Sports, 6 returning starters, 101st in returning snaps, 116th in returning offensive snaps, and 105 in defense. Now, Blake, here's the thing. I don't like that right now that they're being put in the back end of a lot of top 25 rankings. I keep seeing them in there, and I think that to a degree, it's a bit lazy that just because they finished the year decently last year and they were competitive and close against USC and Oregon, that they deserve a shot in Indiana to be in the back end of the top 25. This is a completely new team. However, this completely new team, Blake, does have some really interesting pieces, and they might quietly have one of the most talented rosters in the Big Ten. What I mean by that specifically is they could have three offensive players that go in the first round. The three players that are on the table, Trevor Lauk, their left tackle, was really, really talented last year. He is going to be one of the best offensive linemen in the country. Cade Piper, who's either going to be playing center or guard, is one of the best interior offensive linemen that I've evaluated during the summer, and I really liked his tape. He is going to be the best starting center if they move him to center and he plays center. He is that good. They have always been a team that when they got to find those three remaining guys, that somebody comes out of nowhere that was unheralded as a recruit, that just was a really strong kid from the Midwest that turns out to be a complete baller because they develop at that position so well. Not to mention the fact that Kamari Moulton, who was one of the more underrated running backs in the Big Ten last year, comes back, and they brought in LJ Phillips, who was one of the most productive running backs in the FCS last year. It's very similar to what Miami did with Tramar Brown, who was the best FCS running back 2 years ago, and he came in and he became the short yardage mauler for the Hurricanes. I think that LJ Phillips is going to do the same exact thing. The problem, though, Blake, is that they have always won through defense, and I think that there's just too much that is getting replaced on the defensive side of the ball, not to mention the fact that there is a quarterback battle happening between Jeremy Heklinski and Hank Brown, and I don't know if they shouldn't have gone into the portal and maybe seen if they could have grabbed a Growski type, someone from a lower level.
Who would want to go play in that offense?
David proved to give them credit.
You're right. They went from 132nd in the FBS to 100 and what? Seventh?
That's a pretty big jump.
Is it? Is it really?
Well, again, this is kind of why you should have pause at Iowa, is that normally they've survived by keeping the game slow, running the football, and their defense winning, and they're not bringing back very much defensively.
New year, same Iowa. What do you want me to dive deep into? I mean, this is the typical reset Iowa year. Really good talent. I mean, because go look at their history, okay? And we can look at their history from just over the last couple of seasons, right? I went only to COVID, okay, because the game has just changed so much, and I didn't want to, like, go beyond that based off of what they were winning. But you go into 2021, they went 10-4, then they went 8-5. They went 10-4 again, and they went 8-5. They went 9-4 last year, so they didn't get to 10 wins. But, Joe, are they going to reset? It's the same thing that's been happening with Iowa ever since COVID. 10 wins, reset. 10 wins, reset. This is their reset year where they got to develop. They got to get guys' experience. They'll probably win 6 games and go 6-3 in the Big Ten again. I mean – Joe, it's just how I feel that they've constantly done things since football has changed. Vander Zee, is he your leading wide receiver? I don't know. You talk about their running game and a good offensive line. It's typical Iowa. Joe, I hate doing this. I really do. Like, we can come out here and talk about players and where we think they're going to be good at, but it's this. It's a new year and same stuff with them. And I got to be real with you. I like them as a team. I like them as, oh, man, Iowa's going to be tough. They're going to run the ball. Phil Parker's going to be a really good defensive coordinator. I'm tired of having the same conversations year upon year. Like, how do we not get absolutely tired of having the same conversations? 10-1 year, reset. 10-1 year, reset. This feels like a reset year for me with them. Joe, I got to be honest. We can look at their schedule. We can talk about all of these things. I know that their schedule is relatively favorable, but the lack of inexperience that they have and then not attacking the portal, I know that they got two safeties out of the portal that very well could be really good under Phil Parker. I just don't think offensively, when it comes down to it, when you got to go up against Washington, you got to go up against Ohio State, and you have other teams in there in the Big Ten that I think that they can very well lose to, I just think that this is a reset year for them, like it has been in the past, and how they've done things. 10 wins, reset. 10 wins, reset. And I just think that that's who Iowa has been and who they're going to be. By the way, you can do that even before COVID, right? Like if you go to 2015, like even a decade plus ago, 12 wins, reset. Reset, 10 wins. Reset, 10 wins. It's just who they are under Kirk Ferentz.
I don't think that that's wrong. I think that there's truth to that. And when you're a developmental program like this, where, and what I mean by developmental, you succeed by taking mostly four stars and three stars. And what they did a lot in the transfer portal this year, they went, it's kind of funny, they went aggressive in going and getting FCS guys, like as many top FCS players as possible. Is a really interesting philosophy that they went with. And I don't know if that's going to work or not, or if it's maybe just a way to bolster depth. But when you're a team that survives off of developing recruits that are not as covered and as focused on, when you send a bunch of guys to the NFL, which they had a lot of guys go to the league, Logan Jones, Jennings Dunker, Caden Wiegen, Bo Stevens, TJ Hall, Max Llewellyn, and I think there's one more guy that I missed. They put a lot of guys in the league. That's a lot of players for an Iowa team last year that I don't think a lot of people realize that they had that many dudes. I think that this is probably going to be more of one of those 7-5 years, which isn't a bad year for Iowa. But when you're getting rid of that much talent, it's hard to bounce back with some of these tough games on the schedule. Again, though, I will emphasize that they have done a really good job of producing some players that nobody was expecting to be good, and they turn out to be stars. Cam Buffington, from what I've been reading, and I was reading to listening to Bud Elliott's Summer School, which is part of CBS Sports as well, and he was talking to somebody over at Hawkeye Insider, which is the Iowa 24/7 sports page, and Buffington was getting some hype. DJ Bonomi, I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, he is possibly the next elite Iowa tight end. They believe that around the football program. Speak to anybody in the NFL draft space, there is a belief that he is the next George Kittle, the next TJ Hockenson, to be that good and to be elite in the NFL. But you're going to need more than that. You're going to need more than the guys that we're discussing and bringing up here. I just don't know what to expect from their defense, even though they've recruited pretty well defensively. Like, you got the Epinesa younger brother, who AJ Epinesa was an elite player for you at one point. There's too many unanswered questions where on this upcoming schedule, they're facing a lot of really good offenses, a lot of underrated offenses as well.
Want to get to their schedule?
Yes. I'm going to read through this one because it was a little harder to bucket them. They start with NIU. They then get, which everybody knows you could lose to NIU. It's always possible. then they get Iowa State. Then they get Northern Iowa. They go to Michigan, they host Ohio State, they go to Washington, bye week, at Minnesota, versus Wisconsin, at Northwestern, versus Purdue, at Illinois, and then Nebraska to close out. The pause that I have, Blake, is I think Michigan's offense is going to be really good. Ohio State's offense is obviously going to be really good. Washington's going to have one of the best offenses in the conference. Minnesota is going to have...
That's on a Friday night, on the road, at 8 p.m.
Yeah, it's a 9 o'clock kickoff. Eastern time. So, and also throw in there, Minnesota's going to be a good offense too.
I'm sorry, Joe. This is an 8-4, 7-5 schedule. Look, that's why I'm just saying, like, Iowa is one of those teams that unless they've developed at an elite level and hit on some guys, I know you talked about the tight end situation. I'm sorry. Who's going to throw them the ball? You know what's really separating Iowa? Let's call it the truth. Here's what's separating Iowa. You don't have somebody that can be behind the center and be a signal caller that can get things done. And you can't separate at wide receiver because you've constantly had good offensive lines. You've constantly had good run games. You don't have the dynamic nature offensively. That's the only thing holding them back. That's what's about to hold you back here, because you're going to get in some shootouts with Washington. You're going to get in some shootouts with Ohio State. Joe, I don't, you're going to call me crazy. Are we 1,000% sure Chip Kelly does mail it in? Because what if he doesn't? And what if Northwestern does have a decently moderate offense? We sure that you can go up against a Brett Bielema Illinois team and win? This is 7-5, 8-14, brother. I'm sorry.
I want to add to that point that you made there. You know what's been kind of interesting is I always felt like, for the most part, maybe it wasn't every year, but for the most part, there always was like a solid Iowa quarterback. I could always feel like, hey, Iowa could have a guy coming out that could be pretty good. CJ Beathard is one guy that comes to mind. Nate Stanley is another guy that comes to mind. Just a really good college quarterback that gets an NFL look and then gets an opportunity. And historically, they've had a couple of guys that were, you know, really, really elite players. Like, you know, Chuck Long is one player that comes to mind.
High school quarterbacks, though, aren't running pro level systems. And so when you have to make three reads to get a completion, that's NFL level stuff when you're trying to, I mean, you're right on that in the past, but Hank Brown going to take over?
Well, no, but that I'm feeding into that point is that, like,
no, I know
why
you
they haven't had a guy. When was the last time that they had a guy? It was Nate Stanley.
I'm letting Hank Brown roll with it and see if he can't use his athleticism to get me yards.
And I remember Hank Brown was, dude, do we trust Hank Brown? Because no, I remember Hank Brown was rough when he was at Auburn.
Dude, he was. I don't trust him either. But I trust Flint, Michigan tap water before I trust an Iowa quarterback right now.
Yeah.
They're 7-5, 8-14, bud. You know what I mean? Like, it's who they are. Like, you can make me want to dive deep into a team. I'm not wasting my time when you're the same team every other year. Why would I do that? I'm not going to do it.
Maybe Joe, 2027 they'll be better.
Joe, over the last 10 years, they're 8-5. You want to know Kalshi and FanDuel and their over under of this team? You know what it is.
9.5.
No, it's 8-5.
Oh.
That's exactly where they've been.
So I think you're spot on with this. I just have not understood why I keep seeing them at like 19th or 20th in some of these rankings. I don't know where it's coming from.
People talk themselves into it.
I guess.
No, they talk themselves into it. I've talked myself into things. You've talked yourself into things. And when we have to convince ourselves of our own take, that's probably where we go wrong. All right. Super chats here. $2. Joe, Utah offense, QB run a lot. Or run right, QB run left, LOL.
Then why were they statistically one of the best off? Then it was, that was working. If that was that stupid, then that was working.
No, they're more dynamic than that. I mean, yes. I didn't like Jason Beckett too. They're more dynamic than that.
They also had a freshman quarterback for a stretch because Dampier got hurt. That's one thing that's forgotten.
That is Bird. But again, I do think that it's interesting to see what Jason Beck does against Big Ten teams. I mean, Michigan's schedule is not easy. It's not going to be. I feel like when we do a Big Ten breakdown, Michigan's on every one of these teams' lists. USC, Ohio State, Indiana. A lot of good coaches there, man. Michigan's got a tough one. Elks, the $2 super chat says, no Arthur Smith. Remember last time we had an NFL OC. Remember the last time that Arthur Smith called plays, they could barely get past the 50-yard line. If you're going to use it against Chip Kelly, you got to use it against Arthur Smith, who, I got to be completely honest with you, I think as an offensive coordinator can be above average, but is he a top five guy in college? I don't know.
I think he's going to be like Matt Patricia, and he's going to be really – but, dude, I think he's just messing with us. You can't put a guy who has never coached the college level before. You can't do that. He's disqualified from the list. He's not even in the conversation because he's never been an offensive play caller at the college level. So no, we're not doing that.
Zeus says, Blake, stop bullying poor Joe. I'm not trying to.
No.
just
That's not me really yelling at Blake. That's not like me actually getting mad at Blake. We do that. Blake, we do it to each other every single time. No, I know that's out of love. This is how Italians express love. We curse
each other. I'm not mad.
The amount of times that my dad has said worse to me and then, you know, moves past it like nothing happened.
Well, that's why I like, okay, sidebar. Like, it's like when I get in an argument, I'm going to whisper this. It's like when I get in arguments with my wife, I can move on within 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
Like, people move on. Like, I just don't, I get fired.
We were both Italian. It wouldn't work. The show wouldn't work.
No, she just stops talking and makes me nervous. All right. We will see y'all again on Wednesday. Until then, y'all have a blessed day. Peace.